Week. My message to America, to the United States, and to Israel is, please think of the Iranian people. If you are thinking of democracy in Iran, and I do believe deeply that a democratic Iran is the best partner for any of those countries to deal with afterwards, leave it to the Iranian people. Please put maximum pressure, but diplomatic pressure. IRGC has been listed by Europe, the European Council, yesterday, finally, as a terrorist organization. They can freeze their assets. Please stop dealing with this regime and do not do a military attack. I don't believe that. That is not for the interests of the people. That is, again, to strike a deal, as Trump wants to. This is not for Iranian people. This is just for business.
I want to thank you so much, Sepida Farsi, for being with us from Paris, France. Iranian filmmaker and activist once jailed in Iran. Director most recently of Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk. That does it for our show. On Monday, February 23rd, Democracy Now! Will be celebrating our 30th anniversary at the historic Riverside Church in New York. Our guests will include Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, REM's Michael Stipe, Wynton Marsalis, the jazz legend, Masab Abu-Toha, V, Hooray for the Riff Raff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland.
Listen to Armando Puentes every Sunday from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., playing the best in Tejano mixing with some traditional conjunto, as well as mariachi music and public affairs pertaining to the Latino community. That's Armando Puentes, only on KBOO Portland.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported us during our KBOO Fights Back end-of-year campaign. With help from our community, we exceeded our $75,000 goal and will be able to continue bringing you grassroots, independent community radio.
KBOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO podcasts, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland students, workers, and businesses participate in the national Ice Out shutdown.
Minneapolis residents organize on a hyper-local level to push ice from their communities.
And Oregon's short legislative session begins next week.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 30th, 2026. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Activists in Minnesota called for a national shutdown today in response to the ICE's crackdown in Minnesota and the 11 people killed by ICE so far this year. They called on supporters to not go to work or school and to refrain from shopping. Locally in Portland, a number of small businesses closed their doors in support of the shutdown, even though January is typically a leaner month for retailers. Restaurants like Gero, Im, Gado Gado, and the Sports Bra announced they would close for the day. Other businesses said they would stay open or donate part of their sales to immigrant advocacy groups. Hundreds of Portland students from multiple schools walked out of school to protest ICE's killings and impact on immigrant communities. Broad economic impact from a one-day shutdown or strike is unlikely, experts say, but they've been happening more often and may help to prepare the community for more sustained direct action. Further anti-ICE protests are planned for this weekend in Portland. A broad coalition of local labor unions plan to rally and march against ICE on Saturday, starting at 3 p.m. at Elizabeth Carruthers Park, on South Moody Street. Again, that's Saturday at 3 p.m. Organizers say they're horrified by the killing of Alex Preti, a union nurse, at the hands of ICE, and want to unite union members against ICE. On Sunday, Portland Contra las Deportaciones plans to rally at City Hall at 3:30 p.m. They're calling for justice for Preti, Renee Good, and all those murdered by ICE. Friday is likely not the final strike in Portland or shutdown. Oregon Farm Workers Union, PCUN, series of Day Without an Immigrant strike continues with the next strike, day scheduled for February 16th.
Everyday people in Minneapolis are pushing back against the surge of ICE kidnappings in their communities. KABU reporter RC is in Minneapolis and on Thursday was on her way to George Floyd Square when she came across a group of neighbors trying to chase off a parked ICE car. She says it took about 15 minutes to get the agents to leave, but in the meantime, she got a chance to talk to one of the neighbors, Nathan Mapletree.
Okay, I am here with Nathan Mapletree, and we are at 37th and Columbus Avenue, where an ICE vehicle is parked, and there's a huge crowd gathered with whistles and car horns. What do you want to share about this situation, or what it's like to do this every day?
It's just exhausting. Like, I'm not out looking for stuff today. I just dropped my kid off, dropped my wife off at work, and just was pulling in my, you know, to go in my house, and it's this thing every day. You hear the sound of ambient whistles and honking in the background, and you try to triangulate, is that around the corner, is that at the park down the street, and, you know, this time it was two blocks to the south of me, so I'm here, and we're just staring at a SUV of four guys. I don't know what's happening. I guess they haven't abducted anybody yet, and thankfully that's the cool thing about this space. Whenever they show their faces, everybody just streams out of their houses, starts blowing whistles, and looking out for their neighbors, because nobody cares. We live in this town. These aren't rapists and murderers. These are neighbors. They're an integral part of this community, and we're watching them get stolen from their homes, and it's just exhausting that it's still happening, that there's this rhetoric, oh, there's a drawdown, oh, we're going to reassign Greg Ravino. It's like, they're still here. They're still kidnapping people. They were kidnapping people in North Minneapolis on Sunday, the day after they murdered one of our citizens, and this is the least we can do, and I wish people could see more of this. Oh, there's violent protests happening. It's like, there are agitators for sure, but this is what most of it is, just sitting and watching and making sure they know that they're being watched. When they come to your city, I know they're in Portland, this is how you react. This is what you do. Decentralized response. It's neighborhood by neighborhood. It's block by block. Nobody's taking orders from the mayor. Nobody's taking orders from the governor. It's block by block. Look after your neighbors and plan for the future, because nobody knows what's coming. We met in our block to talk about, what if the lights go out? What if tanks start rolling in? How do we take care of each other? How do we look after each other? Sorry,
No, you're doing...
It's been a lot of pent up, like...
And that's why I'm here asking you.
Yeah.
Because I want to hear the feelings as well as the thoughts. Do you ever feel afraid of the violence coming towards you?
I mean, I'm a father. I'm not one of the guys that's going to get up in the face. I'm here to watch. I'll videotape. I'll blow my whistle. I'm not going to get in somebody's face. Am I afraid? Yeah. You don't know. Renee, there's this outrage over what just happened because it's a Second Amendment issue. It's a Second Amendment issue. He had a gun. He had a right to have a gun there. He shot a woman in the face for being in the road. And, like, I got kids on my block.
That was KABU reporter RC speaking with Nathan Mapletree in Minneapolis about his neighborhood's efforts to push ICE out of their community. Mapletree encouraged other demonstrators to be careful when organizing in large groups, citing recent news about the potential monitoring of Signal chats. Signal is a popular encrypted messaging service. He said, quote, "We're not scaling up." Mapletree says that he's in contact with his block, which has a block captain. But he says, quote, "There's no orders. I think the example to set is it has to be organic and it has to be small, end quote.
Oregon's short legislative session begins on Monday, and lawmakers have a lot on their plate for the next 35 days. Each legislator can bring two bills forward, and a big focus is sure to be curbing the impacts of immigration and customs enforcement. State Senator Winsby Campos and Representative Dacia Graber will co-sponsor the Health Care Without Fear Act, known as Senate Bill 15-70. The bill aims to prevent hospitals from being used by federal agencies against those who need care. Other law enforcement officials are required to follow certain rules, but ICE officers haven't been held to that standard. That's part of an ongoing dispute between Legacy Emanuel Hospital and its unionized nurses, who say ICE officers have jeopardized patients' safety and privacy. They say ICE officers roamed the halls, sat in on sensitive exams, entered restricted areas, and removed patients from the hospital against medical advice. On top of that, two Portlanders were shot by Border Patrol outside of Adventist Hospital earlier this month. Another Portland family was arrested by ICE outside that same hospital while trying to take their sick 7-year-old to the ER. The sick girl wasn't seen by a health care provider for another 5 days while she was in ICE custody.
General Motors and OnStar are being sanctioned by the Federal Trade Commission for selling data on driving habits to third parties. Those companies then sell them to insurance providers, which may raise rates. Privacy experts object to the practice and say national legislation is needed. Crystal Blair has more.
Imagine your own car has been spying on you, tracking data on your driving habits that insurance companies can use to raise your rates. That's what the Federal Trade Commission says happened to drivers of General Motors vehicles with the OnStar Smart Driver feature. Now the commission has ordered the data transfers stopped. Lena Cohen with the nonprofit Electronic Frontier Foundation says some drivers had no idea they'd enrolled in this feature because car salespeople signed them up without telling them to get an enrollment bonus.
Even drivers who did realize they'd signed up for these OnStar features didn't realize the extent of the data they were sharing and what that data was being used for.
GM says it has shut down the Smart Driver program, unenrolled all users, and cut ties with data brokers LexisNexis and Verisk. Under the FTC order, GM and OnStar are barred for 5 years from sharing certain data with consumer reporting agencies. For the next 20 years, the company must get clear consent before collecting or sharing vehicle data, give drivers access to their information, and allow them to opt out or delete it. Cohen urges Congress to pass strong data privacy laws that apply to all car companies.
It's too easy for companies to bury their data collection and sharing practices in long terms of service that no one actually reads. And all car makers should be forced to get people's explicit consent before engaging in invasive data sharing practices like these.
You can find out what data your car is set up to collect at vehicleprivacyreport.com. It's also possible to request a report from LexisNexis and Verisk to see what information they have on you. For Michigan News Connection, I'm Crystal Blair.
The Senate rejects ICE funding, but a last-minute compromise looks likely to keep the government open. Trump's border czar takes command of immigration enforcement in Minneapolis as the FBI raids a deep blue county election authority in Georgia. With that story and more, it's Zamon Perez with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
ICE and CBP are out of control, and we cannot approve that bill until common sense reforms are included. That's what the vast majority of American people are demanding, and many Republicans now also say that must happen as well.
Washington State's Patty Murray and other Senate Democrats joined 8 Republicans to vote down funding for Homeland Security and 5 other agencies. Democrats are demanding reforms in the agency's aggressive tactics after 2 protesters were killed in Minneapolis in less than 3 weeks. They want independent investigations into those shootings, along with tighter limits on immigration agents. Late yesterday, the Senate agreed to extend DHS funding for 2 weeks to allow negotiations and pass the budgets of the other departments. White House Border Czar Tom Homan has taken command of the ICE operation in Minnesota. President Donald Trump removed Homeland Secretary Kristi Noem and Customs and Border Official Greg Bovino from the chain of command. Homan says the mission will continue, but will change.
What we've been working on is making this operation safer, more efficient by the book. The mission is going to improve because of the changes we're making internally.
Trump has lost public support on immigration, which helped return him to office just a year ago. A Reuters poll found nearly 60% of Americans say the crackdown has gone too far. Republican Maine Senator Susan Collins says her opposition helped end a just declared ICE sweep in her state. Collins faces a tough re-election battle. FBI agents raided Fulton County, Georgia's election office yesterday as part of a probe into the 2020 election. The Blue County contains much of Atlanta and has been the focus of numerous election conspiracies. Reports say agents hauled away hundreds of boxes of old ballots. Their search warrant cites two federal felonies, a ban on voter intimidation, and a requirement to keep election records for nearly 2 years. Fulton County Commissioner Mo Ivory slammed the raid.
This is an attack on our elections, meant to keep you from trying to go to the polls in November, being too afraid to change what's going on in our nation. So instead of worrying about people dying in Minnesota, here we are at the Fulton County Elections Hub.
Trump has long insisted he actually won Georgia, and that victory was stolen from him by fraud. Those claims have been refuted by Republican state election officials and his own first-term attorney general. As recently as a week ago, Trump said, quote, "People will soon be prosecuted for what they did in 2020. Minnesota Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar formally announced she would run for governor. That comes after former vice president nominee and current governor Tim Walz said he would not seek a third term, following an onslaught of right-wing attacks over a childcare scandal. And Republicans on Capitol Hill unveiled the text of their Make Elections Great Again Act. Watchdogs warned the legislation would include some of the most extreme federal voting restrictions in recent history. The bill, if passed, would impose photo ID requirements, bar states from counting ballots after Election Day, and ban universal mail-in voting. I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with some rain showers and an overnight low of 44 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 58 degrees. Today in history, in 1969, the Beatles perform for the last time publicly on the rooftop of Apple Studios in London. The concert was broken up by police. The quote of the day is from U.S. President Franklin Roosevelt, who said, quote, "Human kindness has never weakened the stamina or softened the fiber of a free people. A nation does not have to be cruel to be tough."
Lawmakers in Wyoming are backtracking plans to cut Medicaid for Native tribes. With that story and more, it's Antolia Gonzalez with the National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Wyoming, lawmakers backtracked this week on what many, including some lawmakers, believed was a big proposed cut to tribal Medicaid funding. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman has more.
Earlier this month, the Joint Appropriations Committee voted to deny a $58 million request from the Wyoming Department of Health for federal funding for tribal Medicaid reimbursements. The move was met with pushback and protest. But this week, Representative John Baer told the Tribal Relations Committee those funds will come through.
I just want to make it really clear that the funding was never, ever in jeopardy. These are accounting issues that we're trying to work through.
Baer is the co-chair of the Joint Appropriations Committee. He originally voted for the cut, but this week said there was a workaround with what's called a B-11, which he hadn't mentioned in the original meeting.
Then they get the reimbursement after the activity is taken care of for the tribal member.
Now, Baer says the committee will authorize the funding for the Department of Health before the session starts. But at current reimbursement rates, that'll be more like $41 million rather than $58 million. I'm Hannah Haberman.
The trial of Native advocate Nick Tilson ended in a hung jury this week. Tilson's still indicted, and the state has the option to drop the charges or press forward, as South Dakota Public Broadcasting C.J. Keene reports.
Tilson is the president and CEO of Indian Collective, a Rapid City-based indigenous advocacy nonprofit. It's known for its projects which advance Native living conditions and its protests of President Donald Trump's attendance of Mount Rushmore. For this case, Tilson is charged with alternative charges of aggravated assault or simple assault against law enforcement. The jury was unable to reach unanimous verdict, leading to a mistrial. Both charges are felonies, and Tilson also faced a misdemeanor obstruction charge. The next steps are in the hands of the state. The Pennington County State's Attorney's Office could drop the charges or push for a new trial. The incident in question dates to June 11, 2022. On that day, footage shows Tilson pulling into a parking space where an officer was standing. In that video, the truck pulls into the parking space, stops short, and moves forward again. The officer was interacting with an unhoused community member. According to reports by the Rapid City Journal, he was stopped for jaywalking. Nobody was struck by the vehicle, but the state contends this was an effort to intimidate the officer or put him in fear of bodily harm. Tilson's defense hinged on his organizations to do community care. In other words, watching police, ensuring officers are operating in line with laws and ensuring community members know their rights during police interactions. For this, Tilson faced over 25 years in prison for what he contends was a human mistake. In a press release following the mistrial, Tilson writes, quote, "I'm grateful for everyone who stood with me through this latest iteration of this lengthy legal battle, the support of my family, lawyers, spiritual leaders, medicine people, and community means everything to me. The fight is not over." At this time, it's unclear if the state will seek another trial against Tilson. For National Native News, I'm CJ Keene in Rapid City.
Oglala Sioux Tribal President Frank Starr comes out, has issued a proclamation banning ICE and associated Border Patrol agents from entering the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. It's in response to ICE activities and recent shootings in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The proclamation states U.S. Border Patrol is assisting ICE in, quote, unlawful conduct against Native people in Minneapolis. Meanwhile, Minnesota tribes, including the Red Lake Nation and Mille Lacs Band, are closing tribal government operations Friday as part of a nationwide strike. ICE out, no work, no school, no shopping is in protest of the ICE presence in Minneapolis. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Many racial and ethnic groups in Minnesota have reported being harassed and unlawfully targeted by the federal immigration crackdown there. Native Americans say they're no exception, and they spoke up at a state legislative hearing on Thursday. Mike Moen has more on the story.
Trump administration officials announced Thursday they plan to draw down federal immigration agents in Minnesota following a sustained national backlash. Local leaders say the negative effects are still being observed, including among Native Americans. As federal officials laid out conditions under which they'll start reducing the roughly 3,000 immigration officers around the state, a lengthy hearing took place at the state capitol. Legislators heard from residents whose communities feel traumatized by the controversial enforcement actions. Operation Metro Surge had earlier stirred criticism for targeting Native Americans despite sovereignty protections. Ruth Buffalo of the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center says the persistent fear speaks to her on a personal level.
Our community is witnessing citizens and tribal members being detained and harassed. Because of this, I now tell my husband and children not to leave the house unless they absolutely have to.
During the chaos, Buffalo says the resource center has had to do occasional lockdowns, so clients have missed out on critical services, including housing assistance. In a separate news conference, White House Border Czar Tom Homan acknowledged the operation hasn't been perfect, but insisted the effort will see improvements as changes are implemented. Buffalo told state lawmakers the additional economic hardships stemming from the crisis are likely to extend beyond individual families and businesses.
When workers disappear from jobs, businesses lose trained employees and productivity. The costs don't disappear. They shift to the state and counties through housing instability, child protection, and emergency systems.
She called on the legislature to pursue policies that protect community stability and workforce continuity. Meanwhile, the Native American Rights Fund this week ramped up an outreach campaign to familiarize tribal populations with their rights so they know what to do if approached by ICE or Border Patrol agents. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
A proposed hydroelectric project in Klickitat County in Washington faces fierce opposition from local tribes and environmental groups. The groups accuse federal regulators of disregarding tribal sovereignty by not including them in the decision to issue a permit for the project, saying it will destroy a sacred area. Isabel Charlet reports.
Washington state tribes and environmental groups are speaking out against a proposed hydroelectric project in Klickitat County near the Columbia River. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, has permitted the Golden Dale Pump Storage Hydroelectric Project proposed by Rye Development. Simone Antor with Columbia Riverkeeper believes FERC has shown a disregard for tribal sovereignty and rights throughout the permitting process.
It's not green energy if it's destroying tribal cultural resources. The burden of green energy development really needs to be spread and not just placed on tribal nations who've already borne the majority of burdens for other energy development across this nation.
In a statement, the Yakima Nation and other local tribes claim the license was granted without adequate consultation and based on an incomplete environmental review. They add the 62-acre upper reservoir would flood Pushpum, known to the Yakima as Mother of All Roots, a sacred area used for hunting, gathering, and ceremonies. Antor says FERC's claim that they've been consulting with tribes for 6 years on the project is inaccurate. She adds there are other holes in the permitting process as well.
FERC never really analyzed the economic basis for building this project and the financing available and whether or not it's a viable project.
Antor notes that while the FERC permit is a setback, the project is not finalized. The tribes plan to apply for a rehearing with the commission, and Rye Development must still obtain other permits before starting construction. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Climate misinformation on social media can be hard to spot, but experts say simple questions can help people identify misleading claims before they spread them. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Scrolling on social media, you may encounter false or misleading posts that question climate science or cast doubt on climate solutions.
Misinformation and disinformation is a huge barrier to the public when it comes to understanding the scale, scope, and causes of climate change, and it stalls real progress.
So Elise Martin, Manager for Persuasion Research and Campaigns at the Environmental Defense Fund, offers some tips for spotting disinformation. If you're unsure about a post, she recommends asking yourself a few basic questions.
Do you recognize the source that is being quoted in the post? If not, does it reference a source that you can easily find?
If you cannot find a credible source reporting the information, that's a clear warning sign. And if the post appears on social media, she says think about whether or not the person sharing it is actually an expert.
It's very easy when just mindlessly scrolling to like and repost something without taking a second to think, well, hang on, this beauty influencer I follow is not really a scientist.
Taking a moment to check what you read and where it came from can help you separate climate fact from fiction.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Now, we go to The Point Puzzle, the weekly radio brain teaser produced by Pearl Stark at KPOV in Bend on this week's puzzle, Snowstorms and Wordplay.
It's time for the puzzle.
With the big storm hitting the eastern half of the country this week, I figured we're all thinking about snow. Take a type of snow that might be covering your neighborhood. Drop the first letter, and you get an adjective that might describe the same neighborhood midsummer. So again, take a type of snow, drop the first letter, and you get an adjective for a very unsnowy place. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Little lights in the ice, splitting, splitting sound. Silver hills, spitting, spitting snow.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of January 26th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 30th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Anna Wilcox and R.C. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Crystal Blair, Simone Perez, Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Pearl Stark, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Robert Barncord. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to